All right, we are continuing to deal with Abraham. So Genesis chapter 20 is where we left off. And you remember, of course, we have seen very clearly that Abraham is a great man of God, and all the wonderful accolades that we could say about him. In chapter 20, we are seeing him at another low point in his life from a spiritual standpoint. We know that he, of course, lied again. So we sort of dealing with that. And we looked at Abraham repeats a previous sin. That, of course, is the sin of lying. At verse 2 of chapter 20, it says, "And Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, she is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah." And so he lied. And, of course, we understand when he said, "She is my sister," that was a half-truth, but that's a lie, isn't it? He purposely tried to deceive, we'll see in just a little bit that it wasn't something he did on the spur of the moment. And so he again repeats a sin that he committed several years ago now, way back in chapter 12. He repeats the same sin. But we try to emphasize that, again, we are all weak in the flesh. And so we all sin from time to time. We realize that. And when it comes down to committing the same sin twice, sometimes we do that. Like, is there anyone here who has never committed the same sin twice? And probably we all have, and no one would raise their hand on that, because it's we have committed some sins over and over again. And hopefully we're working on different, if we have some difficulty, some problem, some sin that we repeat from time to time, hopefully we're working on that and trying to overcome that weakness of the flesh. But we're all like Abraham in this regard. And so he committed this sin. Of course, God then appears to Abimelech and warns him about all of this. Verse 3, it says, "God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, 'Behold, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife.'" And so, as I said last week, this dream quickly turned into a nightmare. And you have the God of heaven telling you that you're a dead man. That would certainly get the attention of someone. And so it did here. And as we go through this, he, of course, argues his case that he's innocent. He didn't do anything on purpose. And so far as taking another man's wife is concerned, that's true. Abraham lied to him, and even Sarah lied to him. And so we find that this situation wasn't his fault. We're not trying to say that Abimelech was a godly man or anything like that. And in fact, the whole idea, even though it was common at that day, the whole idea of taking a woman into your harem and having a bunch of women from that standpoint is not a godly situation. So this is not a godly man, but he isn't guilty with regard to this crime. He didn't realize that he was taking the wife of another man. And so, of course, God tells him he's a dead man. So verse 8, so it says, "Abimelech rose early in the morning, and God called all and called all his servants and told them of all of these things." And so right away, he is terrified about all of this. And don't forget that the situation with Sodom and Gomorrah has just taken place. And it's just interesting, back in those days, that you know, all of that would be hard to explain. Most people in this pagan society would view that as a supernatural situation with Sodom and Gomorrah. And they, now again, these weren't God worshipers, but the heathens of that day, and really for several generations after that, they had respect for gods, plural. Like, they believed in and had respect even for the God of the Jews, for the most part. And but they didn't serve him, but they viewed him as any other god. And so the thing about it is, 99.9% of the gods that they served were dumb idols. And so the only one that was real was the God that they didn't serve very much, but they believed in him. Like Nebuchadnezzar, you remember in his situation that he, of course, he believed. Why did he believe in God so much? All right, turned him into a beast, didn't he? So he came out of that praising God. He never did worship God, per se, but he knew God was real. And so he had a healthy respect for God, you know, up to a certain degree. But that's just how they viewed all these different gods of different people. And so they believed in some, their own personal gods that they would serve more than others, but they were idolaters. They believed in the plurality of gods. And so when something like Sodom and Gomorrah happens, what do you think the people would immediately think of that situation? That those cities just being obliterated like that. Huh? Right. They would know that it was a supernatural situation, and it's not far-fetched for here now. Abimelech, he sees this happen. He gets this dream, and a supernatural being is speaking to him in his dream. It's not too far-fetched to think he would conclude, this could be the one just destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. And so he wakes up terrified, and he shares it with all of his men, and they're terrified. And so God has the attention of all of these pagans. And so what does he do? He calls Abraham right away, because he realizes that Abraham lied to him. So he wants some answers. So Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, "What have you done to us? And how have I sinned against you that you have brought on me and my kingdom a great sin? You have done to me things that ought not to be done." Was he wrong about that? Oh, he wasn't wrong about that, was he? And that's kind of a shameful thing. Here is this great man, Abraham, again, a spiritual giant among God's people. And yet he's done this thing that even pagans would say ought not to be done. That reminds you of anything? Can you think of another situation like that? Huh? Korah. David, that would be a good example too, David, no doubt. But Korah, we think of that because specifically Paul said to the Corinthians, you're doing something that even the Gentiles would look down upon. The sin of incest, of course, even as ungodly as the Gentiles were in at Corinth and at that day, they wouldn't do that. There were certain things they just wouldn't do. So here you have a so-called Christian, a member of the Lord's church, at least, who's committing this kind of terrible act. And what a disgrace it would be. And I don't want to put Abraham in the same situation as the man of 1 Corinthians 5, of course. But the response is the same. Like the response is the same with us. When you, as Christians, when you don't live according to your profession, it's not going to look good to the world. Paul said about the Jews as a whole that the Gentiles blaspheme God because of you. And so we're not to take these kind of situations lightly. And here's this pagan king then saying to this man of God, you've done something you ought not to have done. Now, notice Abraham's pitiful response. Abraham said, I did it because I thought. And if I remember, that's right where we left off last week, where who is the one that comes to mind when we look at that? I thought. Nahum, the great commander of the Syrian army. He came down with leprosy, but now it's arranged for him to be healed, and so the prophet of God tells him, all you have to do is dip yourself seven times in the Jordan. If you had leprosy, and most of you Bible students, of course, you understand how terrible of a disease that is, and incurable. His end was going to be disastrous. I don't know exactly why it is in his case that he's still commanding an army. Maybe it hasn't gone into full effect yet or whatever. But in the end, leprosy is just a terrible, terrible disease. And if you had something like that and someone said, all you have to do to be healed, to get rid of it, to be clean and made whole, is dip 7 times in the Jordan River. How quickly would you get yourself into that river? Would you think, oh, no, that's kind of dirty. I don't like that river. What about these rivers of Damascus? I don't want to do that. Well, that was the stance that he made. And so even his servants came to him and said, you know, that's just silly. If he would have told you to do some great thing, you would have done it right away. And he got to thinking about that and rethought his situation and ended up being healed, dipping into the Jordan. But what we all remember, because many sermons have been preached from this, is him saying, behold, I thought. Behold, I thought. And good sermons have been preached from that passage. The idea of just assuming something. There are a lot of people who are going to lose their soul because they assume religiously. And it's a dangerous situation. It always turns out, most of the time, it doesn't turn out good when you assume things. Like when it comes down to things like musical instruments, people just assume God won't be angered by that. We don't have to assume anything, do we? Like when you stick with the Word of God, when you can prove by the Bible what you're doing, you don't have to worry about anything. I have no fear whatsoever standing before Jesus in judgment and him condemning me for singing praises unto God. Why not? I can put my finger on the passage. I know for a fact that's what they did in the first century. So I know for a fact that God is pleased with that. Well, yeah, but I'm just assured that God won't be angered by a musical instrument. No, that's an assumption. That's making the same mistake that Naaman made. So we have to be careful about assuming things. Why? You know, we often point out, let's take the safe course. Isn't that always the best thing to do? Like instead of guessing. You know, I think this skirt is long enough. Why not be sure about it? I think the shirt's not too tight or whatever the case may be. I think it's okay for me to go over here and this sinful situation and mingle with people, even though I'm not going to sin. So I think that's okay. Why not take the safe course? Abraham, really, when you think about his whole situation here, he didn't take the safe course from the very beginning. And so here he is assuming, and what he assumed is kind of eye-opening here. I thought that there is no fear of God at all in this place. Well, why in the world did you go there then, Abraham? If he really thought that, like he's going to a place not where there's just a little bit of fear of God. There is no fear of God at all. Those are his words. There's no fear of God at all in this place. So that was his first mistake. Whether he was right about that or not, that's what he really believed. And still, that's where he was going to set up camp. That's where he wanted to go. That's where he wanted to live. And so that led, of course, to his sin of lying. And so he says, there's no fear of God in this place. And they will kill me because of my wife. Besides, she is indeed my sister, the daughter of my father, though not the daughter of my mother. And she became my life. Again, just lying. He's deceiving, purposely deceiving. We'll see that clearly in just a minute. But he's trying to deceive them. And now watch verse 13. It just gets worse. Verse 13 says, and when God caused me to wander from my father's house. What does that remind you of? Adam, right? I mean, how many sermons have been preached on Adam or comments made about Adam? What did Adam do? Right. So he's passing the buck, wasn't he? The woman you gave to be with me. And so we come down hard on Adam over the years for that. But Abraham is doing the same thing, isn't he? In fact, when you really look at this, now watch. He's not speaking of God very favorably right here. Like in this moment. And let's keep in mind that overall Abraham is a righteous man. Not only a God-fearing man, a man of faith, but he loved God. And they were friends. He was the friend of God. But it just shows you what the flesh can do in the moment. And in this moment, he is really speaking negatively of God. I mean, these are harsh words. And when God caused me to wander from my father's house, he's putting the blame right on God. God caused me to do this. And when you look, you see that word wander there? The Hebrew word for wander appears exactly 50 times in the Hebrew text. And it's never positive, this particular word. It's a word that was used in different ways. Sometimes it would describe animals that were wandering off. It was even used once to describe a drunkard staggering away from a place. It's used just to deal with the seduction of sin and how it leads people, causes people to wander from God. It was used once of a prophet who was teaching a lie and led people astray. So the point of it is, you look up all the times this particular word was used, it's always negative. We're told there were several other words Abraham could have used that carried the same idea of wandering, but he chose this word. And the point of it is, he's really blaming God. And he's talking to a pagan king. And he's in a situation, he's trying to defend the indefensible. And so he's not taking his time and choosing his words carefully. He is blaming God in a very negative way. When God caused me to wander from my father's house. And again, I understand. I think you would agree that if Abraham had, if he wasn't in this moment, in this situation where he's kind of called out here by a pagan king, and you were able just to ask Abraham about God's call and calling him to leave his family and all of that, Abraham realizes that was a blessing. That was a great thing. But right now, in this moment, he's not feeling that. And so he's using negative language. God caused me to wander from my father's house. And I said to her, now listen to this. This is the kindness you must do me. At every place which we come, say of me, he is my brother. Now, don't you stop and think about that. That little verse right there. I don't know that I remember that being worded just like that at this particular place. It puts Abraham's lie into a completely different perspective. Like, this was a planned and premeditated lie. Now, I wouldn't go so far as, you know, I had on the screen last week, I can't even remember the fellow's name, who sort of indicated that lying was a part of the nature of Abraham, almost like he was a pathological liar. Abraham wasn't that. But with regard to this particular problem, this particular sin that now he has committed for the second time, this goes back years. He planned to do this kind of thing years ago. Like whenever he was in this situation. And you would have thought after the first time he didn't turn out very well and he was embarrassed by the whole situation, he would have rethought that little deal he made with Sarah. But here he does it again. That tells you he hadn't changed his mind about it. He was going to handle this situation when it came up just like this. That's different from just lying. Have you ever lied on the spur of the moment? Really? Nobody is going to say, yeah, I've done that. All of you have. I know you have. Yeah, right. That's right. Listen, we don't have to be pathological. I can remember times, even since I've been a preacher, where I have lied and felt terrible about it. I've never been a habitual liar or anything like that. But, you know, you could get caught up in the spur of the moment. I'm just being honest with you. I can remember two or three times when I lied and almost immediately repented. And pray to God and forgive me. And because when things happen in the spur of the moment, the flesh is weak. I tell you what happened just a couple of weeks ago. Shante didn't want me to tell this. She doesn't even know what I'm going to say. I didn't lie, but I could have. I got a call from Dale, I'll tell you the situation. He called me and he said, now to explain it, on our Thursday morning class, Gary comes and opens up the building and shuts it. I appreciate that. Gets here a little early and he unlocks it and locks it up. But he wasn't here a couple weeks ago. So when I got here, I had to unlock it. But then I forgot to lock it back. And so I get a call from Dale. And just let me explain this to you. There's a different relationship between elders and preachers. Particularly if you respect the elder. And I respect all of our elders. And if the elders call me and say something, it's always been like this with me and elders that I respect. It's almost like I'm being called into the principal's office. I'm a little worried. And so Dale calls me and he says, Don, the doors were left unlocked. And Carolyn was scared to death, came into the building, was scared to death. And she wants to know who left the doors unlocked. Now I'm thinking about an ex-elder's wife. And I'm even more scared. I'm thinking, uh-oh. Now Dale's going to be upset and I made Carolyn mad. And so I'm thinking, Dale doesn't know this, but when he asked me that, I paused for a second. I'm telling you right now, I could have gone either way with that. I could have said, oh, I don't know, Dale. But I didn't. On that occasion, I told him the truth. I said, Dale, that was me. I forgot to lock it up. But I'm just being honest with you because God already knows I was close to going that way. And that's the kind of lie that I'm talking to you about. I've gone the wrong way on that and immediately felt terrible and asked God to forgive me. But that's the flesh. But that wasn't Abraham. He didn't do that. This is a whole different situation. You all have all done that, probably. But Abraham planned this for years. This was his way of handling this situation. And when it came up again, he put it into motion. That is hard to reconcile with a man of God. Yeah, go ahead, Greg. Right, yeah. Hadn't thought about that, but you could be absolutely right about that. Yeah, good point. So what does he do in that fear? You know, this whole thing is hard because Abraham should know nothing's going to happen to him. He has just been promised that in a year from now, his wife is going to bring forth a son. His name is going to be Isaac. He has all of these promises working for him. The fact of the matter is, he's pretty much invincible because God has already made the promise. And he should have realized that, but the flesh is getting in the way, and he's scared for his life. It is, without question, a lack of faith. It's momentary. Don't overdo it with your view of Abraham. Remember what I've said a few times already. You don't judge someone at their lowest point or their highest point. It's his overall life. He had highs and lows, and most of his life were highs. This is a low. And there's no question that it's hard to reconcile this action with the man Abraham overall. Like up to this point, he hasn't repented over this plan that he has made in his mind and going way back before Genesis 12, taking Sarah aside and said, hey, you got to do me this kindness. You must do this. Whenever we're in this situation, this is what we're going to do. Now, all these years later, he does it again. So that's something. Go ahead, Barb, and then Fred.
Right.
Right. Well, of course, we have no way of knowing. But, that is the situation that we've always said. You obey God rather than man, right? All of you wives, you have to submit to your husband unless what? Oh, yeah. Sure. And she's not blameless because she lied too. Even though, like, their situations, we could have sympathy, and I do have sympathy with Sarah. Just the way this is worded, you know, he uses the word kindness here. And that's kind of, you know, you must do me this kindness. I'm thinking he didn't word that to Sarah in a way that left her thinking she had a whole lot of choice. But she did. Like, we always have a choice, don't we? Like, if you're faced with obeying God or dying, what are you going to do? Now, I know that's easy to say, but that is the right answer. So she did, at the end of the day, have a choice. But I think most of us would, you know, most of that blame goes on Abraham. This was his doing. This was his scheme. And but she went along. She went along with it. But there you have it. Yeah, go ahead, Fred. Yes, right. Yeah. Right, yes. That, great point. I mean, there's no question about that. And there's, in a lot of this, I can't explain to you. You may as well not even raise your hand if you're going to ask me about why did God tolerate? It doesn't seem like God got upset with Abraham at all in all of this. And then he again is, at least God permitted it. It wasn't a part of his direct will, but as a result of this, again, he is rewarded by Abimelech. And that's the only thing that comes to my mind is Paul talking to the Athenians. Remember what he said of that in times past, times of this ignorant, what did God do? He winked at. But now commandeth all men to repent. And God understood overall what kind of heart Abraham had. Like, he wasn't just a pagan man. But I don't have all the answers to why God did a lot of things in the Old Testament. But this one with Abraham is puzzling, because this is a man of God who not only purposely lies, but demonstrates a lack of faith shortly after he had this theophany it was in the very presence of the Lord. So it's hard to explain. Some things we don't have to explain, but we can learn from it anyway. And here it is. And certainly we have to make up in our mind, we're going to do what's right no matter what the situation is. Go ahead, Rick. Right. Yes. Right. Yeah. There's, and I understand what you're saying, Rick. And there certainly this might play into the idea of why God acted the way he did. They were under a different law. Right. No. No, but one thing we do have is that even these pagans realized that these things were wrong. Like, and again, Abimelech wasn't wrong. I mean, Abraham did a wrong here. There's no question about that. You know, what you're saying, Rick, may answer why God tolerated. This was, at least from our standpoint, where we are today, times of ignorance. But they were, I don't want to get too deep into any kind of moral law and that sort of thing, but they were under law. Like, if that wasn't the case, there was no sin up until that point. So there was a lot. We may not can answer all of how God communicated to them and what, but they without question were sinners in those days. So yeah. Yes. Right. Yes. Right. Yes. Yes. Right. Yeah. Yeah. We just can't answer that. We don't know all the details of that. But there is a moral code that most, that even heathens understood, that there are certain things that you shouldn't do. And that gets deep into other discussions that I really don't want to have. But even, again, even heathens realized certain things were wrong. And certainly Abraham did. He had to have been aware that he was deceiving. And I know you're not saying he wasn't aware of that. Maybe he didn't understand the negative consequences of it all. Remember what we saw last week? That, I mean, his lie hurt a lot of people. Put Sarah into danger. I don't know what God told him and what he didn't, but he had to know this could work out in a terrible way for my wife. That has to be bad. It put the promises of God in danger itself. God could not have been altogether thrilled with what Abraham did, because if it would have continued, if God didn't intervene, and he did intervene because he knew if he didn't, it could have destroyed the whole plan. And you got to keep in mind what we're reading about right here. This is really the beginnings of God's scheme of redemption. And if it goes wrong with Isaac, then God's whole plan is destroyed. God wasn't going to let that happen. So he intervened. And so there's no question that what Abraham did was wrong. You know, all the other stuff is very difficult and we don't have to nail down. But he, without question, did some things that were really not good for someone who was supposed to be a man of faith like he was. And so kind of hard to explain, but there you have it. But going back to Acts chapter 17, we don't have any of those excuses, do we? Now God commands what? All men everywhere to repent. And so we have to think about that. Now, one of the things we'll find as we go forward in this is that God does take sin seriously. So, and Abimelech and people with him found that out. Watch as we go on. Down at verse 14, it says that Abimelech took sheep and oxen and made servants and female servants and gave them to Abraham and returned Sarah, his wife, to him. And Abimelech said, "Behold, my land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you." To Sarah, he said, "Behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. It is a sign of your innocence in the eyes of all who are with you, and before everyone you are vindicated." So, again, Abraham seemed like he's being rewarded, not necessarily from God, but certainly this king is rewarding him. And that could be answered just because now the fear that Abimelech has of God in all of that. Then Abraham prayed God, and God healed. This is the interesting part. God healed Abimelech and also healed his wife and female slaves so that they bore children. For the Lord had closed all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. Now, what does that tell you about God and sin? And again, we don't have all the answers to all the pieces of this puzzle. But obviously, God wasn't happy with Abimelech. He didn't know it. We didn't know it up until these verses that God cursed them, closed the womb of all the women so that they couldn't have children. Was Abimelech a good fella? No, he did this in ignorance. But it's not to say, as I was saying in the very beginning, it's not to say that he was really a man of integrity overall. He did this with integrity. That is, took Sarah into his harem. But the idea of doing that, that wasn't something that was good in the eyes of God. And we know that because God immediately punishes him. And that just tells us we better think twice about sin. God does punish sin. And today, of course, sins of ignorance, again, going back to Acts chapter 17, that's not going to save people. And so this just tells you, it's just kind of interesting the way this chapter closes. I don't even know, I mean, how would, depending on the timing of all this, I don't know even Ambibilic would have known that they had been punished like that. Really? How would they know that so quickly? They couldn't know that. And so, but they were. And the Holy Spirit found it necessary to reveal this little bit to us. But God struck them because he took Sarah into his harem. So, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I do know it wasn't, they didn't have time. It was within a year. From chapter 18 to chapter 21, when Isaac is born, is exactly a year. We know that because that was the promise of God. And in the next chapter, we're going to see Isaac being born. So it's a year later. So obviously, Ambibilic and his female slaves and whatever, they wouldn't know that they had been struck like that. So, yeah. Yeah, there's providence of God all over this situation, and it's very, very, very interesting how it unfolds. But let's, again, chapter 20, just kind of a low point with Abraham, but and Rick was right. In the end, both he and Sarah are righteous, and they're viewed as righteous and referred to as righteous and as people of faith in Hebrews chapter 11 without question. And so, you know, we don't want to overreact to this situation, but here it is. But it's what I've been saying from the very beginning with these Bible characters. They were just men and women, and they made mistakes. And sometimes they make mistakes that we would greatly condemn in one another. Like if you found out that I lied the way Abraham did, you might would lose a little respect for me, and you might say, you know, we need another preacher. Which would be totally an overreaction. I would point to Abraham as that. But you know, we need to learn. We're weak. We make mistakes. And if we're willing to repent and go forward, then God forgives us and we ought to forgive each other as well. All right, we'll pick up on chapter 21 next week.